Hi, I'm Chris Eubanks, and you're listening to Blackspin Global Podcast.
Hello, guys. Welcome to the Blackspin Global Podcast. I am Lucy.
And I'm Eugene.
And welcome to a brand new episode. Today, we have... How are we going to introduce this?
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod.
Second appearance on. And we're in New York. Special.
You're forgetting something big. Because whenever I'm on Twitter, all I'm seeing is, yo, ESPN, we only want to see Chris. Obviously, we have Christopher Eubanks back here again. Hi, Chris.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Thank you for joining us.
We really appreciate you joining us, man.
It's with all the work you guys do, I love coming on and just talking tennis. It's like, that's what I do, literally. And to see how much work you guys put in, I'm like, man, anytime I can sit down and talk with you guys and answer some questions. We've been talking for the past 30 minutes. Like, match day schedule. You guys have been like, what? Stuff is cool to me because that's most of the people I'm around. Those are just like normal things.
Yeah,
so to see you guys like so excited about tennis, so excited about, you know, the behind the scenes, so excited. Like that's, if I get the chance, help out when I can. So this was a no-brainer.
But yeah, like Lucy said, you've been killing it on ESPN, man. Like, we'll get on to that later on.
Okay.
But we just want to kind of have a recap of like your year, because it's been a pretty special year for you in terms of like some landmark stuff.
Yeah.
Let's start with the Davis Cup. So debut this year.
Yeah, this year after Australia.
If you can take us back to that like experience, like was that kind of everything that you kind of thought it would be? Because it was USA played.
And we played Ukraine in Lithuania. Yeah, so it was... To be honest, I never really thought that much about Davis Cup because I think it's probably going to be the same theme for what we talk about later. But I've never thought that much about it only because I know to play Davis Cup, you got to be like a top 4 or 6 American. Mm. We're strong right now. Even before this past year for me, we're strong, really strong. So I never put myself in thinking about, oh, man, be cool to play Davis Cup. I was like, man, oh, it'd be cool to play main draw slam on my own. That'd be nice. That's been the majority of my career. So I never put that much thought into it. And then when it started, the possibility came up. They were like, hey, I forgot how I found out. I got a text from Bob Bryant.
Okay.
And he was like, hey, we'd love to have you on the team for Davis Cup. And I was like, Davis? Like me? I was like, what's going on? And I was like, absolutely. It was a no-brainer. They told me the logistics of it. Finish Australia, play Ukraine in Lithuania. So that kind of confused me. I played Australian Open, second round, Taro Daniel. And similar to what I'm doing now, I just stayed behind and did some commentary for a few days. And because I just wanted to use that as an opportunity to, get some reps and, get better and learn more and stuff. So I was like, I'll finish playing and then do commentary all the way up until Davis Cup. We left, forgot what day. I think I left Thursday or Friday of the second weekend. We went to Lithuania. We started up a training week. It was really cool, though. It was a really cool experience. Like myself, Sebi, Fritz, Austin, Crotch. It was really cool. And it was just, I didn't know if I would play. I didn't know how it worked. Came up. I was just excited to be there. I was like, bro, I got a Davis Cup uniform. I was like, this is crazy. I used to see that uniform all the time on Andy and James. Yeah. It's different now, but I'm like, man, I got one. My name is in it. I got to have the whole practice week with the practice partners, and we did just fun activities and hanging out and all that. So it was really, really cool. And then to go out there. And get a win. My first match was, listen, I don't think I've ever been that locked in a pre-match.
How did it come about in terms of you knowing you were going to play?
So, I can't remember exactly. I played the first, I think I got thrown in. I got subbed in, I think, on day one.
Okay.
Something like, I don't remember the details. So I can't remember exactly. But I remember I found out, I think, the original roster was Fritz, Sebi, myself. And I believe, it was Fritz and Sebi to play 1 and 2. And then maybe the next morning, maybe was it Fritz who, no, Fritz play?
I think it was Sebi
played, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, Fritz didn't play. Yeah, he was nursing something. That's what it was. Mm. He had a really physical match in Australia, and he came to Davis Cup kind of like still, I think, dealing on the back of that. And so he didn't play, and then I got in. But I think because at the time, I think the way it worked is my current ranking then was higher than Sebi's by like a spot.
Yeah. Oh.
So then I ended up playing one or Sebi. It was weird. Like I'm literally learning all this stuff on the fly. I'm just like, so I'm gonna play. Okay. All right. Cool. So just let me know who win. Like I was so ready to go, and obviously you have that my first time. Those guys have played Davis Cup before. They'll play Davis Cup many more times for the U.S. We gonna see about me, you know. Like so, like my big thing is like when I went out there, I was like I played a guy. I think he was like 400, but good young player, like nothing to lose. I was like, I'm doing. Like Francis said after his match the other night, he goes like, I was gonna die for that win. Like I was like, no, I cannot let these guys down. Like I cannot. I do not want to let Fritz and Sebi and Austin and Crosh. Like I didn't want to let the team. Bob,
course.
Dean. I was like, I can't let. So I went out there trying to be as locked in as possible. I played really well.
Did it take you back to like college in terms of like that kind of team environment or not? Not really.
The one thing that's different about it is in college we have six matches going on at the same time. This is just. But I never. One time in my college career, my freshman year against Georgia, I was the last match on. And one more time my freshman year, I think against Virginia, I think I was the last match on. But it wasn't a deciding match.
Okay.
It was like, I think in both cases, we had already lost 4-2. And I was still on, and then maybe I won and pushed it to 4-3, something like that. But it wasn't like, you know, big time.
Yeah.
Davis Cup is big time. It's like being the last match on when all your teammates are watching, it's a different kind of pressure. So I didn't have that feeling in college, so I can't speak to like how similar that is, because like I just gonna like my matches, it was like we were all on, and a lot of times like I was first, second, or third off. Occasionally I had like some long ones, whatever. But a lot of the guys who played like six and five, they had that last match on feeling multiple times.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They played just the game styles were just that's how they played. They wanted to make it long, so they had that. Everybody's watching, like cheering after every point. Like they, I didn't have it as much, so that's just. I can see it being very, very similar.
Fair.
But based on your reaction, you will definitely do it again if you.
Oh yeah! If I get the chance to do it, I'm gonna do it again. It was a lot of fun.
That's good. That's great.
The Olympics now. Let's talk about the Olympics. I know we're kind of going back and forth because I do want to talk about like your Grand Slam kind of results as well this year. But I want to just focus on the kind of highlights. So the Olympics. This was your first Olympics.
Yeah.
Paris. Obviously, you played in Paris before Roland Garros many times. But yeah, like just take us back to like, I don't know, getting the, finding out you were selected for one. And then, yeah, the experience of being there, like opening ceremony, everything.
So when did I find out? So I knew I was like the fifth or sixth American. I knew I was like somewhere around there. I knew you had to be top four again.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then I think, I knew this for somehow it was going to drop like one or two spots. Don't remember exactly how I knew, but I knew like it was probably going to drop one or two spots. And I was like, oh, I'm kind of close. And then so I believe I heard the cut for it was after the French. I was like, it's not like I'm dropping any points before the French. So like, I was like, it's the only way to go up for me. I lost every single match, but I was like, I can make up some ground and give myself maybe like, you know, a little bit more cushion. Lost every match of the clay court season, and then still ended up getting it because I was the fourth. I was still the fifth or sixth. Like, I can't remember exactly, but I got in. And that was kind of like my reaction of being like, wow, I'm going to go to the Olympics. Like that's even outside of tennis, outside of sport, that's like something you could always take pride in putting on your. Like I was an Olympian, you know. Mm. So I was like, yeah, Atlanta, DC. Sorry, like if I get in, like I think I'm for sure going to go. And so it came to me. I got the opportunity. It was even more special to, like, have that with Coco.
Yeah.
That part was, like, really, really cool.
Mm.
Her first Olympics, which could have been 2020 in Tokyo, but it wasn't. So to share that with her, too, and to see hers and then to have her be the flag bearer, like, everything was, like, I'm sitting there watching it, like, wow, this is really special. To see all the other athletes just, like, ooh, and just like worshiping this girl. Wow. I'm saying we're walking through dining and people are coming, oh my God, go. And I'm used to like tennis fans, but these are like full fledged, like professional, like best world's best athletes, and they are like fawning over this girl. And I'm looking, I'm like, are you really like a big deal? Like, it was like, it was cool to also like see her, and the way she handles that stuff is like unbelievable. She takes it in stride. Like she always is gracious with the picture. Oh yeah, sure. Oh, like, can you make a video? Yeah. Hi. Okay. What do you want me to say? Okay. Like, she's like so chill about it. Like she's unbelievable at it. So like, I'm watching that and then just taking in like the opening ceremony, everything that came with it. Like it was really one of the coolest things in my career.
The thing is that from the outside, it's funny. I think there was even a little joke on social that was saying like, it seems like the tennis players were the stars at the Olympics or something like that. Like, a lot of people were trying to get pictures with like Coco, Nadal, Alcaraz and everything. Yeah. Like, it was giving that vibe. Would you agree? Would you think it was just all athletes all together? Because there was another, I can't remember her name, sorry. There was a rugby player who was so, excited about seeing Shelly Ann. Emma had
some of the funniest interactions I've ever seen between two people. I was so like,
Emma had the LeBron thing.
Imitating each other, like doing accents back and forth. And we're getting ready to get on the bus and to head to the opening ceremony. And they're just going back and forth. And it's like, just, they're just funny. It's just like, it's weird. It's just like she said something funny. Emma said something funny back. She, and then Alona said something. And they would do something. And it was just kind of like, I was like, oh my God, this is hilarious.
So you feel like it was like an excitement thing for all athletes, or do you think like it
was? No, there were definitely some athletes that were different. Right. Like there were some athletes like
the NBA guys.
But we didn't see them as much because they weren't in the village.
I heard that as well. Yeah.
But like,
were you guys in the village? Because I heard.
Yeah, yeah. I started in the village and then I went to a hotel.
Okay.
So we had the option.
And I started. I did two nights in the village, and then I was like, all right, can I get a hotel?
This ain't for me.
It wasn't the beds. Like people always ask, like, was it the beds? It wasn't the beds. It was just the food in the village wasn't what I'm used to.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's fair.
So like, listen, the other tennis guys, Tommy, Fritz, and Marcos, they stayed in the village. They had a great time. I was just like, okay, breakfast is really good. And then after that, I'm like, it's tough. And they were like, oh, you can eat it. Like, and then it was a little bit of a hassle trying to like leave and go get food. Like you could, but.
Oh, it was an outside.
Yeah, if we wanted to go to our favorite restaurant in Paris, we could. It was just such a hassle getting outside of the Olympic Village, calling an Uber, the Uber finding you, then going to the place, then coming back to a drop spot, then having to walk another 10, 15. It was just kind of like, it was a lot of hoops you had to go through.
Yeah, Paris was a bit, because I was in Paris during the Olympics and it was really hectic because the city is already so small.
Yeah.
Like I remember when they introduced the Olympics in Paris, I was like, where's everyone's going to fit? it's just ridiculous. I can imagine, but aside from that, it was a great experience.
No, it was a great experience. The Olympics as a whole was a great experience.
Did you watch any other sports as well?
No, it was tough. I think once you left the village, it was a little more difficult because the way that it was set up from the village, like there were buses going to different sporting venues. So like if you wanted to go to volleyball and you knew which bus it was, like you could just go on the schedule and just go and use your, I think you probably had to have a ticket too. I never tried.
Yeah.
So like you could go and then like go see it and then take the bus back. Like, but once we left the village, it was like, where is it? I got an Uber where? And then they go drop off and we got an Uber. I was like, nah, I'm good. Like, so I made sure to, even after I lost, I stayed and tried to support each of the guys. I think I got to see, I for sure watched Austin and Crotch. I got to see Tommy. I got to see Tommy and Fritz in doubles against Vasek and Felix.
Okay,
I came back to watch that. That was really good. Geez, Tommy and Fritz were playing some unreal doubles.
They medaled, didn't they?
Bronze. Okay. Yeah. They were playing some unbelievable doubles. I tried to, even after I lost, I was like, I still want to come and support it a little bit. That was cool. That part of it being a team was nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's talk about the ranking drop. You kind of alluded to it earlier as well. It's been a tough year.
Yeah.
I'd say, your points from Wimbledon dropped off after Wimbledon.
After Wimbledon, but the points from Mallorca, I think the points from Mallorca and Wimbledon dropped at the same time.
Yeah.
I think because I don't think they drop it. I don't know. Maybe new rankings do release on the Monday of Grand Slams. Maybe. I don't know. I know it was a big drop in a little amount of time. That's what I do know.
the question is, do you think that's kind of freed you up a bit as well?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Even after I lost in Wimby, obviously I was bummed to lose. I mean, Halish played unbelievable. He played some really good ball. He qualified in. I think he lost a tough one to Holger. he beat somebody pretty good second round. So he was playing well at that time. And he just straight up beat me. But like, even afterwards, I went back to the locker room. I was like, ooh, all right, well, I don't have that dark cloud hanging over me anymore. Like, now we can just play tennis again. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it definitely felt a little bit like, cause I went from there, I played really well in Newport. Obviously left for Paris, came back, and just wanted to get matches gearing up going into the Open and wanted to kind of find my footing again. I hadn't played on hard, obviously, since Miami.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, that I lost second round there to Jake Fearnley, who went on to win the tournament. He was playing some really good ball. Guy's good. He pushed Novak. I was like, this guy's actually pretty good. So I lost to him, and then I went to Cary, played well in Cary, won two matches, lost to Safulin. 4-4 And then the next week I played Winston-Salem, won two matches, beat Safulin, saving two match points, I think, won 7-6 in the third.
So that was
and, like, then I was like, ah, okay. I hadn't beaten Romain before. I think he had beaten me three times up until that point. But I'd always kind of like the matchup because it's big hitting and it's he's such a good ball striker. It's like we get into these rallies where it's just like, pow, 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 and it's kind of like, even if I lose it, I'm like, ah, that felt good. Like, you know, but he plays such a, he has such a big ball. It's just a matchup that I like, even when he was beating me, I kind of, I enjoyed playing him. And I won that match and got fortunate, obviously saving two match points. But I was like, man, even if I had lost that match, I'd like where I'm playing right now. Like I'm playing better. I'm playing more like what feels like myself. And yeah, and then came out, who did I lost tough one to Mickelson, lost 6-3 and he went on to final. Yeah. But even in that match, even though that like that Mickelson match was kind of like I lost it, but I was like, he got me 6-3, but I'm playing better.
Yeah.
Like, I'm playing a lot better than I had previously been playing over the past few months. So lost to him, came here, played a good match against Brendan Nitsch, and he just beat me again. It's like another 6-3 And the funny thing is, after the match, I'm talking with my coach and I'm talking with Steve, and we're sitting there together. And I was like, man, it's just, it's a tough one to, you know, have. And he goes, yeah. And he goes, my coach, Ruan, goes, yeah. And it's the second 7-6 in the third in a row. And I went, oh, Mickelson was 6-3 and then he was like, oh, I guess I probably shouldn't have told you that. So we had a funny laugh about it. I was like, I didn't realize it was 2-6-3 It was in a row. It's 6-5 6-3 whatever. I was like, come on, man. He was like, oh, my bad. But, yeah, so, I mean, that's just the drop, the adjustment from being, you know, challengers to all of a sudden being main draw and everything. Like there's a learning curve that takes place. And it's, I feel like it's not just with me. There are a lot of guys who kind of ascend to that top 100, whether quick or not. And then there's a little bit of, I've seen it from many guys who they have a little bit of kind of like a whoa drop and then you build it back up. And then usually guys are very stable that next time, you know, some people can do it the first time and it's never an issue, but I have seen the get there, drop and then get back and then it's like, oh yeah, now I'm back for, you know, and I'm consistent. It's just different with scheduling, with being top 50, not being able to play challengers. I couldn't go and just get more matches to like get my confidence. I had to play the whole clay court swing. I couldn't not, I couldn't, every other year I went to like Asia during the clay court swing. I was like, I'm finding hard courts. Like, what are we doing? And then, yeah, I would go do that. And now it's like, okay, I played Houston. That was the third time I think I played Houston. After that, I hadn't played. I played, I think, Challenger in Bordeaux a couple years ago before the French. I actually beat Gasquet there. I had to save a match point. Don't know how. And then I actually got chopped by Ilias Emer, second round.
Oh.
So I played Bordeaux and maybe something else. I'm just saying it, but I don't remember. My whole red clay court season career. In Europe, it was either Houston. I played Savannah Challenger. I did play that in Atlanta, in Georgia, on green clay. I played that, and I played Houston. Before this year, I hadn't touched clay besides the Bordeaux and Roland Garros Squallies every year. Usually, I go to Mexico, play in altitude. The first Challenger I ever final was in 2018 in Guadalajara in Mexico during the clay court season. The next week, I won my first Challenger in Lyon. In Mexico, in altitude during the clay court season. Like, that was what I did. And now I come into this year, and I'm like, oof, man, I got to go play it. And, like, I'm excited, but it's different. There's a whole learning. I'm like, I didn't really grow up playing on clay. Like, so I'm like, I'm still trying to figure out how to slide. Like, you know, I'm just like trying to understand, you know, giving a little more space and create, like, still playing my game, but like also adapting to the surface. And I think that was the biggest kind of thing for me. Like, am I going to play straight up how I normally play, like trying to serve a volley and just run in, or am I going to have to like adapt a little bit? Yeah. And I kind of throughout the whole time just kind of bounce back and forth between the two. So then I'm not winning, and then so the confidence drops, and then you, to your original question, you got that dark cloud of like Mallorca's coming up. As much as you try to ignore it, it's like it's there. You don't have to stay in your mind long, but it's there. Mm-hmm. And started to play well, and Halle was up, was in the quarters. I won two rounds of a 500. Was in the quarters. So 5-3 in the third on Zhang. Served for the match, got broken. He held, broke me again, and then held. If I hold there, I'm in the semis of a 500. My drop isn't nearly as big.
Such fine margins.
Like, it's not like it's literally like I'm still top 100. I think. I didn't do the math because I was just happy to be winning matches. So I was like, I'm just going to put my head down and just play. But like, I'm no dummy. Like, I know how to point to, like, without looking it up. I kind of have a rough estimate. So I know, like, I didn't think about like all of that, like serving for the match, but like there's extra tension that's there. I think in the back of your mind that you want to, you're forcing it a little more because in the back of your mind, it may be somewhere in your mind. Like, even if you're not thinking of like, man, I got a lot of points I got to defend. My body's telling me, step to the line, go flat wide, like hit your spot and be ready. And then I missed my first serve. I'm like, you idiot, how do you miss your first serve? Like, like these are the crazy conversations we have in our heads. But
how has Steve Johnson helped you as well? Because you kind of, I think you spoke about it in Newport a bit, like having him on board, like it's kind of helped you just, help with perspective.
Like, yeah, I think Stevie is unbelievable with his knowledge of tennis and just his knowledge of like, and his honesty with regards to like the demands of the tour and, you know, how tough it is. Like and I've known that for a while, and I've always respected his opinion because he's just honest. He's just what he feels like. He doesn't always give the, I told him about the thing. I was like, I think in Halle, I was like, I think maybe it was in the back of my mind when I was serving for it. He was like, dude, there's only like four guys in the world that doesn't pop in their mind. Like, like that happened. Like, yes, normal. Like, it's just how you did. And I'm like, oh, well, this guy was top 20 in the world. This guy was, he had been top 100 for however many years. Like, this guy's like three, whatever, however many titles. Like, he's won on clay, he's won on hard, with, you know, using the backhand slice. Like, so it wasn't just a tennis thing because he's a guy who likes to play with his forehand, is good with the backhand slice, really good server, really good coming in. It was also the, I trust his opinion, like, because he's straight up. He's just honest about it. And I can just be like, hey, man, this is what I was feeling. Probably shouldn't have felt that way, but it's what I was feeling. And he'll be like, yeah, man, like, that's normal. Or, like, days I'll come out and practice and I'm obsessing over a couple errors I had. He goes, hey, like, you're a good tennis player. Like, calm down, loosen up. And it's like, again, it's just honest. And I'm just like, well, this guy was top 20. He says I'm good. I must be okay. Like, you know, so it's also hearing, like, kind of allowed me to put things in perspective. We're at practice. He goes, hey, you're out here to focus on these things before your match tomorrow. We don't care about this other stuff. Like, if you're missing this shot that you're probably not going to use tomorrow, don't obsess over it. Like, just focus on the things we're here to get better at. And I'll be like, oh, yeah. I don't know why I was obsessing over the one shoulder high backhand I like, you know, hit wide. He's like, you're not going to get that ball tomorrow. We're working on the other slides of the forehand. So it was a good perspective, as well as like good tennis knowledge.
Yeah. So yeah, obviously the slams this year was a bit different in like, you know, your performances. But most importantly, I've kind of felt like you had really tough draws as well. Really tough draws. Anytime I looked at the draw, I have a little speculation with the draws. Anyways, that's a whole nother story. Well, no, I'm not going to put you on the spot with that. I'll leave that between me and Eugene. So round two in Melbourne, you had Rublev.
Yeah, boy, he was lighting the ball up that day. That was like a 4-4-4 in like an hour, 27. This man broke me like early, I think, in every single set. Broke me my first, I served to start the match. Broke me first game, he held, and then we held all, and then held all the way through 6-4. And then broke me like my second service game in the second set. Like I was like, bro, like, I can't apply no pressure. Like if I can't hold serve to 3-all, 4-all, like I'm having a hard time like making him feel like under duress. He broke me easy, boom, boom. I was like, okay. And then he went on the quarter. I actually called one of his matches for ESPN, his match against Demonor.
Wow.
I think it was like it's a fifth set. Both guys were cramping at the end. Yeah, I called that one from in the bunker. And I was sitting up there looking. I was like, yeah, I knew he was playing. It was fourth round to make quarters. I was like, yeah, I knew he was playing well. Like, he's, I was like, this man is not missing. Like, so, yeah, that was a tough one.
Yeah.
That was a tough one. Paris. Yeah, that was going to be tough.
That was the one that hurt me the most. When I say it, I was like,
but the thing is, when I hear that and, like, I get those draws, like, I get so excited because really? I'm like, this is a great opportunity.
It's true.
Like, I know my game, like, or I believe my game is, like, good enough to just, on any day, if it starts to connect, I can cause some guys some problems. So, like, I see those, like, when I found out I got them, I was like, yes, like, cool. I know that's good. I thought it was going to be on Chatrier. I was like, oh, I'm going to play on Chatrier. I went out to Chatrier when Kogo was practicing. I was like, oh, so the boxes are, like, all up there, huh? They're a little ways away. Okay. And then the schedule came out. I played on Longland. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, I remember that vividly. I was in there, like, she was practicing with Ostapenko. And I walked in. I was like. I was talking to her mom. I was like, which one of the boxes? I was like, oh, yeah, because I think I'm playing in here.
Would that have been your first time?
On Chatrier. I practiced on it before, but first time playing. That was. But I look at you, those as, like, great opportunities. That's so, like, great. I get excited the draw comes out and I have a big name because I'm like, if I can connect, I can make, I think I give myself a good chance. So
it's great because we kind of say that sometimes on the pod with other players and we say the same thing, like it's great in terms of like exposure or, you know, giving them like a little bit more like confidence and motivation. But
And also that too, it's a good measuring stick. It's like, bro, I'm playing the best player in the world. Like if I can push him and I can, you know, get a set or whatever, I think he beat me in straights, but if I can like, you know, break his serve on the surface, it's a good way to like, you know, just measure up to the best.
How do you feel you played in that match as well against Sinner?
I was playing well. I was playing okay. I think I was down to, it mirrored our match in 2022 at the US Open. He got up a double break on me in that match and I got one of the breaks back going into the second. I think he got up a double break on me in this same, in the first in Paris, I got one of the breaks back and it was like, it was a very mirror image. Like if I remember right. And then, second and third were like, I couldn't touch him. Yeah. Really? Not really. I think also it started to rain. They closed the roof and the temperature dropped. So like for me to have a good chance on clay, I need it warm. I need the ball kind of moving through the air. And it was okay at the start of the match. I stood wide and went kick wide. Short and tried to send him as far off the court as possible. It's more effective when it's hot. And then it got cool. And then it's like the ball don't jump as much. He's clubbing the ball. And I'm like, oh, man, it's about to get real tough. Like I felt the breeze come in and I looked up. They were closing the roof. The referee is behind the court. I'm like, why are we closing the roof? It was like Cedric Morier. I was like, Cedric, why are we closing? He goes, rain is coming. I was like, okay, all right. Then it was chop city after that. I almost broke him when he served for the match. I think I got a break point, and then he hit like 2-3 aces. Yeah. That was a wrap.
The handshake, I find it interesting because I was like, you can see there was like a mutual kind of respect there.
I think Yannick's like, I think he's unbelievable. Yeah. I think he's such a nice guy. Like it's funny in Paris when I arrived in the locker room, got to the site. Picked up my credential, went to the locker room to like drop off rackets. He was the first player I saw, and he made it a point to walk, come over to me. Like he was went out of his way to go, hey Chris, like how you doing, man? Oh, like nice. Good to see you, whatever. And then he went on about his day. It was just like three or four players in the locker room, and like we know each other. We always say, hey, like how you doing, and kind of keep it moving.
Yeah.
But like he was like going the other way, and he like stopped and came over, dapped me up, and went on. And I was like, damn, like he cool, you know? Like,
a lot of time for that.
Yeah, and then. Yeah, and then we ended up playing. The draw came out. I was like the first player I saw. Of course, it's him.
And then after that, you had obviously Wimbledon, and round one was against Haddis. And obviously, your form picked up during the grass season, anyways. And like you said, like you reached the quarterfinals. But how did it feel going into Wimbledon, especially after the year that you had last year?
Yeah, I didn't think that much about it because at that point I had gotten to the point where whatever's going to happen, it's going to happen. I lost first round by Yorker, which was tough. Played a tough one against Mintic. He outplayed me in the
good
third.
Good player, Mintic.
Yeah, he's really good. And so, like by the time I showed up at Wimbledon, I wasn't sweating it. I was like, whatever's about to happen, it's going to happen. I'm just going to kind of play. And I really like had some really good practices. I had some really good practices, and I was going into that match really high on confidence. And it was like an overcast and cool day. Again, I like warm.
Typical London.
And it was overcast and cool. It was rainy. We ended up having like a couple rain delays. And Halas came out serving rockets. And I was like, whew, this is about to be he broke me early. Mm. And I'm like, geez, man, this guy is clubbing the ball. There was not much I could do. So like.
And coming through qualifying as well, you when players have matches under their belt, it does show.
Yeah. And the thing is like people like Halas is a quality player. Yeah. Like Halas has been top 100. Mm-hmm. Like, so, I mean, whatever his ranking was at that time to get into, he was in qualies. I don't know what happened. I think he qualied into French too, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure he qualied into French. So he was playing well. Like, it's not like it was a guy I'd never heard. It's like, no, this guy's an actual player, mm-hmm. despite whatever mm-hmm. his ranking might be. So like, I didn't go into it underestimating it. And like you say, coming in from qualies, like he's a quality player who's been winning matches. Like, yeah. That's dangerous.
Yeah.
And he was straight up too good.
Yeah.
So is grass still your favorite surface? You were saying
yeah.
it last year.
Yeah, it still is. Like, I got a title on it. I got to ride with that right now.
Good to know. And then, round one in New York.
Another Frenchman.
Yeah, I know, man. Arthur Rinderknecht. Yeah, he...
But this was five, so this was a much more closer.
Yeah. No, this was a battle, man. Yeah. I mean, I came out, I played a rough first set. I was very tentative, and Arthur has such a big game. He serves big, he hits big off the ground. So if you're a little bit off the gas, he's just clubbing balls, and I'm like on my back foot the whole time. So I lost the first. And then in the second, I was like, you know what? I need to just up the aggressive. I'm just going to get more aggressive on my swings. I'm going to have to go after the ball a little bit more. And I started to find my range on it. And then I started playing well, started serving well. And then it just kind of rolled into, I won the second, won the third. Getting to the fourth, he broke me early. I think my first service game in the third. Held all the way through. We played fine. And then we get into the fifth. And I had a couple games early in the fifth. I had to save like two or three break points. I think that was 115-40 in the fifth. I got out of that game. There may have been another like 30-40 later on. I got out of that game, and then we got into the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
And he played too good, man. Like he made returns. He, what was it, one mini break, 10-8. I think he got up a mini break on me early. I got it back, and then he got another one, and then it was just kind of holding serve the rest of the way. But no, he was playing well. Like, I still like the way that I'm playing. Like, I know it sounds funny, like, you know, it's a tough loss, obviously, but the way that I'm playing now is very different than the way I was playing in like March and April, like May. Like I'm very confident in like it's going to come together. I have to kind of continue to put in the work, and then it'll start to click because I just feel like I'm playing well. I'm playing a lot better, and at some point you just keep giving yourself the opportunity, and then you're like, hopefully it'll kind of click, and then I've seen what can happen when it clicks. So it's like I'm keep working, and I just trust it.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, this season was completely different. You had to go through the main draws and everything.
It's very different. So, yeah. I mean, hopefully I can get there again. And then maybe I know a little bit more, you know, I'm a little bit more, you know, experienced and stuff. I can do it, you know, I think just experience helps. Yeah.
Did you find it tough going from, you know, the hard court to clay to grass and then clay and then were you used
not
to it
really.
Because of
I lost that clay court match in 45 minutes. Like I was training and like feeling good in practice and stuff on it, and then I was like, I lost that match in I think it was like 56 minutes. I'm like, it was under an hour, I think. Benjamin Hassan, who I thought was German, and then all of a sudden they're like, yeah, Benjamin Hassan from Lebanon. I was like, what? He's dual? Like, he can do that? I was like, oh, I still can play. I still can play. So, yeah, it's not like it's not like I was like three rounds in and then like I lost first round in under an hour.
So, yeah, Chris, let's talk about ESPN now. You are literally the star of that network, I'm going to say.
That's okay. This is how you get in trouble. No, I am not. Let's not do that.
Forget Stephen A. Smith.
That's how things get clipped. Like, no, sorry.
We're trying to go viral.
No, not me. Not me. I'm good.
Just quickly, so Lucy posted, it was... pre-Medvedev coming
yes.
on.
Yes.
Yeah.
You did the pre.
Yeah, the angle of the camera. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
like, Medvedev looks, I don't know, he looks about 5 foot
bro,
four.
Me and Medvedev are like the same height. I don't know how that picture got there. Like, the cameraman is so close to my shoulder, and Daniil has like maybe like a foot or two this way. So, like, it just, he's looking, like, it's like right behind me, and Daniil looks like he's there, but we're the same height. Like,
that's crazy. So I looked at that.
The one with Francis is actually kind of funny.
Yeah. Because
Francis is like, he's like, he got like a little smirk on his face. So he's like, man, like, he's got this, like, look, it's just funny. Like, that one is funny. Like, the Daniil one, like, it, I'm like, bro, like, how is this possible? Like,
yeah.
We're the same height.
Yeah, he's really tall.
He's 6'6", like, yeah. I'm 6'7", like, we're the same height.
But some of the comments, so, like, some of the comments in terms of responses to the post, Lucy, that you posted. So we had Nessa Peaches, I'm hoping I'm saying that correctly. So the way I'm smiling from ear to ear right now, like, just watching you on TV, like, interviewing these players, that was Nessa Peaches. Then we had Lima Limon. Chris is an amazing commentator. ESPN needs to have him on as much as possible. And then we had Valerie Hawkins. So this is a long one, but well worth reading. Was disappointed that Chris lost first round, but I could only be impressed with how, he suited up and ready to go today, providing expert commentary on Medvedev-Kobody match. And apparently you made a comparison to Medvedev and Luka Doncic?
Yeah, so the thing that I've always been excited to maybe do a Medvedev match because okay. I see people, listen, tennis Twitter is toxic.
Oh,
it's crazy. I had no idea it was as toxic as it is. But also, like, I'm sitting up here and I'll go through it sometimes. And I was like, see people who just, like, don't know tennis or, like, don't understand it. It's just, like, because Daniil, they'll say, like, how does this guy win? How is this guy so good? Mm. Like, he just pushes. He just makes balls. And, like, I'm like, I played him. Like, I know, like, it's – for us, it sounds like, what do you mean? Like, he's not that good. I feel like a common thing about Daniil is that people see his game and they don't see the value in it or they're not impressed by the shot making or they're like, all he does is just run and just make balls and it looks funny.
Just like aesthetically pleasing.
It looks,
yeah.
But then when you talk to players, they all say like, Daniil's tough. Mm. Like you don't want to deal with Daniil. Like Daniil is tough. And it's like, it reminds me, I've heard a lot of like talks about basketball. They say like people, fans, casual fans used to look at Luka. He's not that fast.
Yeah.
He's kind of slow. He kind of gets in there and it just looks very, it's smooth, but it's like, it's not as, you know, eye popping to watch. It's not like a Ja Morant. It's not like a, it's like not explosive. Yeah. It's just like, how is he doing this? Like, and I feel that same kind of way about Daniil. And another reason is because one thing that Luka is known to do is listening to a lot of his peers say, they say that you can't speed him up. He plays at his own pace.
Mm.
Like, he's so big. He's so strong. He's quick enough to get past you if he wants to, but he'll also slow you down. So if you're trying to, like, make him go somewhere, he just doesn't let you. And Daniil does that in tennis to me. Like, no matter how hard you hit it, Daniil can take the pace off and just send it back flat, deep with, like, and takes all your pace off. And he does it again, and he does it again.
Consistent.
And now you're, like, injecting pace. Now he's using it against you. And then it's like, okay, well, I'm going to play a little bit higher. I'm going to change it. And he's just like, nope, you're going to keep in the same type ball no matter how you send it over here. And you're going to have to run me side to side off of it. His ball stays so low, it's so tough to attack. So, like, from player standpoint, we all know how tough he is. And then he'll dial up a service game where he'll hit 3-4 aces, serve first ball winner. And then you got to serve. And the ball's back at you, and you're like, oh, I got to deal with this again. Like, he ain't going to give me nothing for free. He's going to make me play, and he's going to make me play the same, like, flat, low, just uncomfortable ball. And it's like, that's why I looked at that comparison. I'm like, people see it, the casual fans will see it, and they may not be impressed, but you talk to their colleagues, their peers, they're like, no, they're tough.
Yeah.
And then the fact that you just can't speed him up, Daniil, if he doesn't want you to hit hard, he'll just – did it. Oh, I'm going to play at my pace. We're gonna make some balls like slow and kind of flat and just ugly and piercing through the court. And then I get a little bit of space. I'll flatten one through the court. Now you're on your heels. Now I'm coming in. And it's just like, it's the same type thing.
Yeah.
Like, you can't rush them. You can't speed them up. They're just both that good.
Incredible. There's one more comment I need to read. So Carlotta, excellent commentary. This is all in caps, by the way. By CE. She's giving you a hashtag. Works well with the other commentators. Like, do you prefer commentating or... Because obviously when you're a commentator, you're in the booth, you're in the kind of, you're watching the match from start to finish. Whereas when you're doing like the pre and post match stuff, it's more quicky, I guess, more snappy.
Yeah.
Like, do you have a preference or not so much?
They're very different.
Okay.
They're very different. They're very different skill sets. I think I like... The interviews are very, make me uncomfortable.
Really?
Which is, yeah. You really couldn't tell.
They honestly make me uncomfortable. Because so, for instance, so this will be good. I think you guys will like this one. So I understand what it's like to be a player.
Of course.
And so I kind of know, I'm like, pre-match interviews, I'm not going to give you much. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to go over here, I'm going to play my game, try for a certain percentage, just my game rules, right? And we're going to go on, and then after the match, like, if I win, then, like, we're focused about the match. Like, we're not going to really say too much. Mm. And so I know that. So I'm like, okay, I can do the interview. And then my first one, oh, what type of question would I as a player, like, not mind answering?
Yeah.
Like, I'll give you a little something, but I'm not... You're not about to find out I'm going to serve a volley on every second serve. Like, you're not going to find out tactics, but like, I'll give you a little something. So I try to put myself in that position.
Mm.
And it's just, it. So I can set the pre-match interviews, like questions. I can write them out. And also we're live on air. I'm not looking at anything. So I'm making sure I remember them. Because each question also, if it's Grigor Dimitrov, I'm saying like, what's going to be the key tonight? I'm going to paint some context and be like, Grigor, you're, you know, whatever, 12-4 on the year when you do. I'll say, like, you're one of, I think last night I said, like, you're one of the most informed players of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, what has allowed you, what's been a, you know, key component to you having this, you know, so-called renaissance, you know, to your career back into the top 10, something like that. But, like, all I really was asking was, what have you changed this year that has, you know, made you get you back in the top 10? But, like, it's like a weird, but sometimes, like, if I'm memorizing it, I'm like, okay, how am I? Now that wording doesn't make sense. How that sounds dumb. Now I'm saying, like, you know, informed players, like, don't say it twice, like, change it up, you know, whatever. And I'm like having to do this all in my head. And then it's like, I have four questions. First one is this, second one is this, next person comes up, first one's this, second one's this. But like, I'm not reading it. So it's like out of my head, I'm like really preparing. Like, I'm not, no joke. Like, if I know we're about to do pre-match interviews in 45 minutes, I, like, go by myself.
Wow.
And I'm, like, thinking, I'm like, okay, nah, that may not be good. Now I'm looking at research. I'm like, wait, how many years did they have the quarterfinals? Like, Francis, last year was his third consecutive year in the quarterfinals of the U.S. Open. And I, like, had to go back and, like, just, let me just double check. Because I know, you know, obviously last year, the semi, I think, but let me double check. Like, I'm making sure I want my facts to be right.
Mm.
So, because I know what it's like, too, to be a player and someone to say something like, you've never beaten this person. What are you going to do? And I'm like, I have beaten them. Like, I have, but you just didn't know that. Like, so the interviews are very different. The post-match interviews are a little bit more lighthearted.
Okay.
I can, and also thing I like to do is I like to include aspects of the match because I'm sitting there watching the match too. Like, you had a big hold at, you know, one all love 40, came
you,
back and held
taking,
and then broke
taking
notes. Oh yeah, I have like my iPad or I have a pen and paper and I'll write key moments. So like, I'll sit there as I'm calling the match, and I do this with commentary too. Like, as I'm sitting there watching the match and a big point happens and someone gets out of a game or they, you know, a lucky shot happens and a let court happens. Like, I write like 15-30 let court,
okay,
one all. Like, so then I can remember, and as the end of the set, we're also kind of painting the picture and framing like how the set went at some point. We're going to do a summary. Then I have, you know, I'll also tell the producers if something like that happens, I'll say, hey, can you clip the point at 15-30 let court? I want to like use that. And then when we come back from the third set, we get into it, we're breaking down, and that's when I really like to kind of go. That's like my favorite thing, that type of, like, kind of like the analyst stuff, explaining like what happened. So I do that even when I'm doing post-match interviews. So like, I'll write it and be like, okay, that was a big one. I'll ask them about that if they get the set. If they don't, nope, can't ask them about it. Like, and it's just the whole time I'm doing little things like that. So that one I love because I can ask them, hey, what were you thinking at this moment? Like, Francis, when he came back, Popperin was serving for the second 5-3-40 love. Francis came back and broke. So my second question to him was, all right, what were you really thinking? Because like, and I said, don't tell me that whole I knew I could fight. Yeah. Like, what were you really thinking? He was like, oh, I was thinking about a third set. It's like, yeah, like, that's what you think. Because at the end of the day, he won. It'd be bad. He wouldn't say that if he lost. But like, he won. So he's like, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, probably shouldn't have been. Like, so the post-match interviews I really like. And then I usually end it with like a looking on to the next or something like that. Or I ask another question about the match. But the post-match interview, I like. The pre-match one, I stress. Because I just like, I'm like, ooh, that's just dumb, like whatever. And because I know guys are getting ready to play. They don't want to have to answer something stupid. Yeah. Afterwards, they won.
Exactly.
Yeah. They'll take whatever. You can get their stats wrong and they'll be like, okay. Well, like, I did beat him, but so I'm annoying. Like, so,
that's actually true.
Yeah. So, and calling matches is fun for me for the reason I explain. Like doing color commentary, I'm kind of painting the picture, or I'm telling why a shot is a little bit more difficult than maybe what you think. Tommy missed an overhead in his match against Center in the breaker, like one all. And as I'm sitting there watching it, I'm literally like, he saw Center guess to that side. I would guess like it looks like a pretty easy overhead, goes up, bounces inside the service box. Tommy hits the tape. And I'm like, I saw Center on the other side, kind of make a little like right, left, and kind of ran that way as Tommy was probably about to make contact. And I'm like, I think he saw him move. Like, so then I tell the viewer, like, you see these easy misses. Like, they're not just missing. Like, there's a, like, that person on the other side also plays a part. Mm-hmm. So you're just seeing them have a easy first ball miss. Like, oh, they're not focused. Like, yeah maybe sometimes. Sometimes, like, that other person, like, it's a little bit, especially in stressful moments, I like to paint the context for that, for the person who's watching. So maybe they can be a bit more understanding in their, in what they're seeing, and then say like, oh, well, these are like the best tennis players in the world. Like, I said, oh, I could have done that. No, you couldn't. Like, you couldn't. Like,
honestly.
Like you couldn't. Like, so that part I kind of like enjoy. And like you say, sometimes they're bad misses. Sometimes you're like, that's what Nick is so good at. Like, I love listening, like Nick's commentary as well. He's honest. Like Nick's just like brutally honest, which is just him. And he'll just say like, he'll say like horrendous drop shot. Like he'll just say it. Like he'll just say it. And like whereas I'm like, I don't know if I wouldn't do that. But like Nick's style is Nick's style. And I think that's why so many people even like listening to him.
Yeah. But I feel like some people actually do like it but don't wanna say they like it.
Yeah,
because everyone is like very formal and understanding, but I still feel it's nice to have that balance.
Oh, 100%. That's exactly what I was gonna say. Like you have a balance, like, and even if since starting commentary and when I watch other sports broadcasts, I see it differently now because I'm trying to like see like the stuff that's going on behind the scenes. Like, if there's a bit of a miscommunication, it's like somebody asks a question and then three people are there and one I'm supposed to answer, and there's a little bit of like a little extended gap or someone maybe loses their train of thought. I'm like, oh, I've been there. Like, ooh. I know, but I enjoy that too, and also enjoy seeing styles of like. Certain NBA commentators work really well together because their styles match up. Certain football commentators work really well because their styles match up. It's like a style. So like you say, some people's style, it's just they're different. Yeah. And I think there's room in sport and in tennis for everybody's style. Everybody can get a flavor of whatever they like. And
I think it's huge as well that you're a common player doing it because, you can give a different look. And you, that's clearly what you've been doing and people are loving it. So
that's the thing is, honestly, like while I enjoy doing it, there's so many times like I just don't feel good when I'm doing it.
Wow.
Like sometimes I may be a little wordy. Sometimes I don't. Here's a great example. I'll say sometimes when I'm calling a match and my head, when it happens, I'm like, you idiot. This actually happened when I did one of the interviews. Daniil played Kaboli. I finished their pre-match interview and I was like, Flavio, good luck. And then Daniil comes up. And I finish our interview and I go, Daniil, good luck. And I'm like, my inflection went up. Like I had something else to say and I just shut off. And then Daniil's just kind of like, all right. And then he goes. And in my head, I'm like, you idiot, good luck. Just good luck.
It's
like, Flavio, good luck. Daniil, good luck. And then I goes, Flavio, good luck. Daniil, good luck. And it's like, I'm like, and I'm sitting there smiling like, okay, you know, like but like I feel I have those type moments when I'm doing commentary a lot. I'll have moments where like I don't end it the way that I want because the point's about to start, or I could have said it better or something, and I'm like, but then like people are always like, hey, I love what you do, and I'm like, really? Like, you're just being nice? like huh? Like that's crazy. Like, really? So that's what it's weird. Like, even hearing you read it, like, I'm so thankful people enjoy it. But, like, there's certain times when I'm like, oh, I was good today. Like, I got my thoughts out. It was money. I had my phrases. I had whatever. I had my stats. But then vast majority of the time, I'm like, I didn't do that well. Like, I could have. could have maybe said that a little better. And I feel more critical of myself. But then people come up and they're like,
You're great.
We like your voice.
Oh, man.
I'm like, my voice? Like, what are you talking? It's the way that you say things, we like your voice.
Some people, no, honestly, though.
And I'm like, okay. I'm like, all right.
People do say, like, yeah, you've got a good voice for it. Like, what's the saying about having a face for TV or...
Oh, somebody's got a face for radio. Yeah, I think it was...
You know the saying. Yeah. People will know. But yeah, Chris, you are multi-talented. Mm. So you need to embrace it, man. I'm telling you. Because you're going to be in this thing for a long time.
I always tell people when they say something, I'll be like, well, when you're not really good at one thing, it's good to try to be a kind of okay at a bunch of things. So I just got my hand in like, let's see what else sticks. Just the tennis thing is getting tough.
Well, what's been your favorite moment so far this US Open? Because it's been a pretty special year for Americans.
Oh, calling Ben and Francis.
Yeah, that's
right. Because I sat courtside when they played last year. I was actually done. My time with ESPN was done. It was whatever quarters. I was getting ready to fly to Atlanta later that night or the next day. And I'd been at the site all day. And I was like, all right, I'm tired. And then I come down. I'm finally released. I come down and I see Ben is warming up on Ash. And so I walk out there and I'm like standing there talking to Brian. I'm looking around and people are kind of not trickling in yet, but there's... First person I see, I kid you not, I walk out of the court, Ben is hidden. I look to the left, Spike Lee is sitting right there.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, Spike Lee here? Like, that's pretty cool. Like, whatever. Yeah. And I think Ben is hidden with Andrew Fenty.
Okay.
And I'm like, I see Spike Lee there. Like, I look around, and I see, like, one of Ben's uncles. He comes up, and he talks, and they're like, oh, we're so excited for the night. Like, such a big night, whatever. And I'm, like, standing there, and I'm watching Ben hit, and I'm like, two of my best friends are about to play on Arthur Ashe Stadium at night. I got a credential. I can sit courtside and I'm going to go home back to the hotel. Like,
yeah.
I got to stay.
Yeah.
So then I like ended up staying, but I wasn't working the match. So I just went and sat next to BG courtside and we just sat the whole match and just talked back and forth. And I remember watching that and being like, the electricity in that place was nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the second time two Black Americans had played on Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Crazy.
So I'm sitting up there like, wow, this is history. And then, the fact that they had to play again this year, third round, and then I got to call the match. I went from, like, just sitting there with BG. He had the earpiece. He was talking to, like, now I'm, like, watching them play the next year. It's a five-set war.
Yeah.
Francis loses a crazy third-set tiebreaker, same as he did last year, to go down 2-1, and then comes back and wins in five. Like, that's cool. Like, especially with the context of the first year.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's like, I was ready to bounce out. I stayed, and I was, like, actually really glad I did.
Yeah.
And then the next year, it's like, hey, you can actually work this match. I sat courtside. No. Did I call? Yeah, I called that one. I called that one courtside. Yeah. I wasn't in the booth. I called that one courtside. Yeah. So like, I'm sitting there watching the whole time I did the interview. Yeah. Because I remember because Ben looked at me one time. I remember he was like,
"What are you doing?"
he was cool. He gave me a smirk one time. But yeah. So that was. That for sure is probably the best moment of calling.
Was it hard having to root for someone, or were you just enjoying the?
No, because like doing courtside, I'm not rooting for anybody. Even in doing commentary, I'm not really rooting for anybody. I'm just explaining or painting the context of what's happening. So
no, I mean like more for like you personally, as in because you described like you know you, two of your best friends were.
Oh, I mean I love them both.
So
like,
I
just wanted to see who was gonna come out on top. I was just sitting there with popcorn. Like it wasn't like I'm gonna sit here and like cheer him on. Like,
yeah.
Come on, like your friends were like, I'm just like, ooh, you boys about to go to battle.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I'm just
yeah.
enjoying it from a fan standpoint.
Yeah, can imagine.
What a time in terms of like you said, American tennis. So you've got obviously Francis and Taylor playing the men's semis. We've also got Emma Navarro and Jessica Pagula as well doing pretty well in women's. Taylor Townsend, Donald Young.
Yeah.
Obviously, Donald Young, there's a story there. You've got history with Young.
Like, yeah, that's like, I mean, Donald's like he's like my big brother.
Yeah.
Like, I've been super lucky to have like some really, really like dope people in my tennis career and journey. Donald's like, he showed me like being a top level pro was actually possible. And then he also invested his own money to like take me to tournaments and let me see pro tennis up close as his hitting partner. So like before I came on tour, like I knew John, I knew Stevie and Sam, I think. Yeah. Cause with DY was around them. Like I knew some, I knew Gael. I knew, who else did I know already? A few guys like Karlovich. Like I knew some people.
Yeah.
So like already because they were like, hey, you travel with Donald. I was like, yeah, like now I'm playing. So like he gave me that opportunity.
Crazy.
And I got to practice with him every single day for, you know, from the time being 15, 16 to all the way through 21. So like I got really good, really fast because of him. Because not many other guys had the chance to practice with pros like that, like that consistently. And I did. And he was 10 minutes from my parents' house. Like 10 minutes, my closest tennis center, it was his parents' facility. And yeah, so like I'm forever indebted. So I'm hoping they get the title. Yeah. I'm hoping they win tomorrow. I'm going to be sitting there courtside. Yeah. Really looking forward to being able to go out there, cheer them on, and hopefully we can get DY, get him a title on his retirement.
What a story.
For sure.
I think we have to wrap it up there, DC.
All right.
In terms of time. So, sure, yeah. Chris, man, thank you so much again for joining us.
No problem, guys.
Live in New York. I say live. We're live now, but it won't be live, obviously, when it goes out. Yeah. But, yeah, just appreciate your time, man, because you've come all the way, obviously, from your hotel.
Nah, it's all good. Like I said at the beginning, like, you guys do such good, like, work. You guys, like, invest a lot of your time. I was like, At least I could do your time and money. Your time and money into coming like us into like, you know, like, you know, just educating people as well. Like it's the least I could do to come and just kick it with you guys. So for sure. Do it. We'll have to do it again. Try to plan somewhere else.
Definitely. And yeah, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. It's been a pleasure. So thanks again, Chris.